But first, we want to talk about the situation in Kenya. The violence has often been described as tribal, and it's often been described, and we tend to hear that in relation to Africa. So we want to sort of talk about that a little bit more, whether that is really true and what that really means. And to do that, we're joined by Alim Hailu. He's a professor of African studies at Howard University. He's also with us here in our Washington studio. On the phone, we have Gail Smith. She's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Hello to you both. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Professor, what's your definition of a tribe?
The thing to do is place it in the location of how the idea of tribe evolved in Western scholarship. It's has both positive and negative connotations in its development. When it really developed was in the second half of the 19th century, when European colonialism was venturing into Africa and other parts of the world. There is the positive component where tribe was in some cases used interchangeably with nation, nationality, like you have the Cherokee or Seneca tribe, Seneca nations, Seneca community, nationality. But what the negative aspect of tribe comes with the scholarship of anthropology that accompanied colonialism and defined Africans as small cultures devoid of larger political context, where other nationalities also survived in bigger communities. So it could have both negative and positive connotations.
So do you think it's a political term as much as it is a descriptive term?
Yes, it's a constructed definition where in some case it can mean a denigrative way of referring to African communities as tribes.
But do tribes actually exist? I mean, people do. Is it a language group?
It is, but the definition, it has assumed a pejorative meaning, just like the proverbial.
But is it a language group? Is it a family group? Like, is it a clan group?
Yeah,
or the
definitions,
religious group?
The definitions that have been used, like common ancestry, common kinship, language, culture, it could easily apply to a national group, an ethnic group, a nationality. But it all depends on how whoever defines it to mean. As in Alice Wonderland, the word means what it's supposed to mean. So it can mean negative, because sometimes the same tribal connotation in Africa would be seen in the European context, whether in the Balkans or even in I always remember the Hyde Park speaker who said the First and Second World Wars were nothing but the European tribes fighting each other, the German tribe against the French tribe. So it all depends on how you want it to mean or how it's defined, depending on how it's used.
Gail Smith, I'd like to hear from you. You covered Africa as a journalist for 20 years, and then you have had positions in the government working with the National Security Council, for example. The media tends to conform to a style guide. It recently advised tribe and tribal to be used sparingly, and that the word ethnic be used instead. Do you think that's a better term?
Well, I think it's better, but I don't think it's necessarily right. My old friend Mina made a good point earlier on that there's a tendency to define crises like the one in Kenya as almost exclusively ethnic, and there is without doubt an ethnic dimension. But the roots are, as he suggested, political and economic. And I think that the tendency to so quickly go to tribe and ethnicity in media coverage of Africa, largely, as the professor suggests, allows it to have a pejorative tone to it. It suggests, whether intended or not, a kind of level of underdevelopment and ignores the fact that Africa exists in modern history. It's not a term that we use in the United States, for example. I mean, the dissection of the primary elections here on Tuesday are replete with references to how Hispanics voted, how Asian Americans voted, how African Americans voted. Nobody ever calls them tribes or even ethnic groups. But when we talk about Africa, and I think very, very prominently, and particularly in the American media more than others, this term tribe is used, and I think it plays to the most ill-informed and uninformed perceptions of Africa and hinders us in understanding what the solutions might be.
But there's a difference between something being divisive and something being unhelpful
right,
to whether or not it is true or not. So
right.
I guess, Manaki, I'd like to ask you, though, are tribal relations part of the crisis in Kenya or not? Or are people hiding behind tribal conflict when it's in fact a political conflict?
Well, the first thing that from where we sit, we don't use the word tribe because we'll only use the word tribe as far as we're concerned when the Germans are called a tribe, when the Swiss are called a tribe, when the Swedes are called tribes. The notion is the same. It's for some reason there's this idea that Africans are not yet nations. They're below that nation. And it's really insulting, to be honest. So we don't use that. So I think one of the things is that, and I think Gail Smith, as she said very clearly, you know, we can analyze the Super Tuesday and say, oh, the Asian American tribe voted in a certain manner. Or the Black African American tribe, although that's got its own connotations, did its own thing. Or the Hispanic tribe, you know, but we don't do it. Why is it that there's a sense of unity or a sense of nationhood, a sense of organizing that exists at the American Western level, doesn't exist for Africa? And if you notice, in fact, if you go back to recent history in the Balkans, when the wars began, nobody called it the Bosnian tribe versus the Croatian tribe. They became ethnic. All of a sudden, Western media decided that that group was a little bit above the tribe, and therefore they're going to be ethnic. So anyway, it's not a fair thing in a sense.
Professor, do you suggest then that the term tribe really should not be used at all?
Even when words sometimes start with innocent beginnings, when they assume enough negative baggage, they are discarded. Like we have, you know, the description of blacks as Negro, which was an innocent word at the time. And or colors, you know, and the baggage it receives leads to redefinition and self description of a group, you know. So it's probably one of those that has to be consigned to history because it has assumed a lot of baggage in what it means and what it implies. Sometimes the undertones, when they say tribal wars, they mean the primitive, atavistic, right, barbaric tendencies that makes them resort to violence without any cause.
Rational context. Right. Gail Smith, I wanted to ask you, do you think that the use of this term makes it harder for Americans and others in the world community to take these conflicts seriously or to even intervene appropriately to resolve them? Because it's perceived
absolutely
as just irrational.
Absolutely, because I think as both mine and the professor have explained, it suggests a point in history rather than a point in real time now, and I think belies the existence of nations and states and reasonably modern political systems. And it causes, I think, people to buy into that really very ugly notion that, well, this is what tribes do. There is a history of intertribal fighting. And if you look at Kenya, that's a gross misstatement of what's happening right now. As Mina pointed out earlier, this is a political crisis. It has ethnic overtones. It has economic overtones. But the notion that it is somehow a kind of senseless, emotional, let's just wake up in the morning and kill our neighbors kind of crisis is very misleading. And I think it causes us, I think, as outsiders, to look down on Africa and Kenya in circumstances like this, to obscure the solutions that rest in the political and economic realm. And I think it just gives a very inaccurate portrayal of what are at once simple political conflicts and very complex political conflicts. As I say, tribal fighting, it makes my hair stand on end when I read that in the newspaper. It's a gross oversimplification that I think really impedes our understanding and impedes our formulation of what the U.S. can do most effectively to respond.
Well, thank you for that, because I think that leads then back to Mina Kiai. I'd like to ask you, in your testimony yesterday, you called for some specific steps that you'd like to see the U.S. and other world governments pursue to help resolve the crisis in Kenya. One is, if you could just, we have about a minute left, if you could talk about some of them. You call for an interim government with power sharing. You also call for a travel ban on the hardliners and also for a halt on any aid, military assistance, security assistance, other than humanitarian assistance. Why?
Because the reason why the process of negotiations is having a hard time, and I think you've been seeing that the government rejected Mr. Ramaphosa from South Africa to be a negotiator is that they're trying to delay it. They've got their strategy is to keep this thing going, and then maybe it'll peter out and people will forget and life can go back. It's important that pressure is put on the hardliners, especially those within the government. They need to feel the pinch. Travel bans hit. Freezing of assets, and they've got assets across the world. They've got assets in America, they've got assets in the UK, assets in Europe, needs to happen. Keeping this issue alive at the international level, at the UN Security Council, is very important. I think that's one of the things we need to do. Keep it alive. Keep, let people understand this is not an easy solution. It's not an easy, it's not a quick fix. And originally, I think the US State Department was coming in as a quick fix and trying to do it. It's not a quick fix. It's easy to fix, but it's not a quick fix. And it needs pressure continuously, especially at those who are holding back and don't want a real solution to the problems in Kenya.
And I want to reiterate again that we have posted your testimony on our website at npr.org/tellmemore so that people can explore your ideas in further detail. We were joined by Maina Kiai. He's chairman of the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. We're also pleased to be joined by Alim Hailu. He's a professor of African Studies at Howard University. He was also kind enough to join us in the studio. And Gail Smith. She's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a longtime watcher of affairs in Africa. She was on the phone. Thank you all so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.